शास्त्र विचार नै निपुनो सधर्म संस्थापको लोकानामितकारिनो त्रिभुवने मान्यो शरण्याकारो राधा कृष्ण परारविन्द भजनान् नन्दिन मतालिको वन्दे रूपसनातनो रघुयुगो श्रीजीवगो पालको वन्दे रूपसनातनो रघुयुगो श्रीजीवगोपालको Srila Jiva Goswami is summarizing the effects of the various perfections that can be achieved, that are achieved in liberation. Among these, that sometimes even a person's material body can become transcendentalized, can become spiritual. Just by the Lord's special potency. It's described thus in the case of Dhruva Maharaj. When Dhruva was, when the Vaikuntha airplane came to take Dhruva Maharaj away, unlike Narada, who gave up his material body and then got his spiritual body, Dhruva went to Vaikuntha in the same body. And just before he stepped in the plane, by the grace of the Vaikuntha Dutas, that body was transformed into a Vaikuntha body. Bibhra Rupam Hiranmayam. That we could see Dhruva Maharaj. This is Maitreya Muni. So, on his testimony, we understood that Dhruva Maharaj's body became effulgent just before he stepped into the airplane. And Sridhar Swami, the commentator on these verses of the fourth canto, says that that very same body became golden, not that he changed from one body to another. Okay. So similarly, we get some description of what the perfection of Sarshti is like. That was explained previously in the Bhakti Sandarbha. In describing the verse of the 11th canto spoken by Krishna to Uddhava, this is number 34 in the book. Martyo yada tyakta samasta karma nivedita atma
Vichikirshitome Tadami tatvam pratipadyamano Mayatma bhuyaya chakalpate vai.
A person who gives up all fruitive activities and offers himself entirely unto me, eagerly desiring to render service unto me, achieves liberation from birth and death, and is promoted to the status of sharing my own opulences. The word Aishwarya, Prabhupada usually translates as opulence to make it simple, but we can trace it back to the word derivation. It goes back to Ishvara. Ishvara means controller. So the power of, or the ability to be a controller, is Aishwarya, controlling power. And it means all sorts of opulences. If you're rich, it means you can control money, and so on. If you're intelligent, you know how to control knowledge. You have an ability to muster knowledge. And if you have the opulence of austerity, you're able to muster the strength to forego sense gratification. So they do mean in general different abilities to control. So we can understand that as the idea of Aishwarya. And then Sarshti is the perfection of having similar power to control as does the Supreme Lord. And it's also described, this is also described in various statements of the Upanishads. Chandogya Upanishad. Satatra Pariyeti Jakshan Ramamana. The liberated soul goes to the transcendental abode. And it's not that he's inactive there. That may be the impersonalist conception of what you do in the Brahmajyoti, you just do nothing. But the Chandogya Upanishad says he goes there, moving about, jakshan, eating, enjoying life. Which means to exercise abilities. A man who can eat means he can muster the strength of his digestive capacity, his stomach is digesting properly, he has an appetite. A man who has no strength, he can't even eat. And an impersonalist who merges into the void can't eat and enjoy life. Also in the Taittiriya Upanishad, it says, Aknoti Swarajyam. The liberated soul obtains his own kingdom. Kingdom means a king is the possessor, and he is the enjoyer of his own kingdom. That means his domain for control and enjoyment. In material life, we're falsely trying to usurp some domain for enjoyment and controlling. The word griha means what you grab for yourself. Yeah. Understanding is it's something inappropriately you take for yourself. But in Vaikuntha, everybody has a kingdom. Everyone has unlimited scope of enjoying and controlling. But nobody abuses it. Everyone just wants to use whatever capacity they have for the pleasure of the Lord. Also in the Taittiriya Upanishad, Sarve Smai Deva Balim Aharanti, the liberated soul, all the demigods are wanting to come to him offering tribute in different presentations. Aishwarya means power to control thing and power to control people. When many people are willing to serve you, then that means you're opulent and powerful. And the Vaikuntha devotees, they're everyone living in the material world, the demigods who are not ignorant of the reality of the spiritual world, they want to serve the Vaikuntha Vasis.
Chandogya Upanishad again. Tasya sarveshu lokeshu kama charo bhavati.
He, the liberated soul, gains the power to travel wherever he wants throughout all the worlds, spiritual and material. So the Aishwarya, the power of having freedom to move and go anywhere. Okay, but there's still a limit to it. Sarshti cannot be literally understood. Cannot be that one literally becomes as powerful in all respects as the Supreme Lord. That's not possible. Vedanta Sutra stipulates this in its last section. Jagat vyapara varjam. The perfection, the power achievable by a liberated soul excludes the ability to create and destroy universes like God can. You know, you can't actually come up to the level of power, the power that God exerts. Janmad yasya yataha. He from whom this, the origin, the maintenance and destruction of this whole creation comes. That's God. And no ordinary liberated soul can have that power. So the idea of having equal power like that of the Lord's must be understood in a relative sense, secondary sense, not literally. Similar power, but not actually equal power. Similarly, in the same way, the other opulences one can gain, like the mystic cities of becoming smaller than the smallest and so on, one may gain some extent of capacity of these perfections, but never as fully as God himself. You know, a mystic yogi has some capacities, but not infinite capacities. Okay, next. The opulences that an associate, a person who becomes a personal devotee, devotee or a personal associate of the Lord in Vaikuntha, the opulences that devotee obtain are permanent. They can never be taken away from him. They're never depleted. This is described by two verses in the third canto, 23rd chapter of the Bhagavatam. Hare Krishna. Ye me svadharma niratasya tapaksamadi vidyatma yoga vidita bhagavat prasada taneva te madanu sevanayanu rudhan drishtim prapashya vitarami abhyayan ashokan. This is spoken by Kardamamuni, to his wife Devahuti. After she had served her husband very selflessly and was, as a result of that, very emaciated and fatigued, he wanted to please her, and her desire was to have children, so he made all arrangements. And first of all, he arranged that her body would be restored to her youth and beauty, and then he was going to prepare a celestial flying mansion so they could travel over the universe and have and enjoy it. So he, before doing that, he told his wife this. Kardamuni said, I have achieved the blessings of the Lord in discharging my own religious life of austerity, meditation, and Krishna consciousness. Although you have not yet experienced these achievements, which are free from fear and lamentation, I shall offer them all to you because you are engaged in my service. Now just look at them. I am giving you all the transcendental vision to see how nice they are. And then he says, Anye punar bhagavato bruva udvidrimba vibramshitarta ratyana kimukramasya Siddhasi Bungshva Vibhavan Nijadharma Dohan Divyan Narayar Durari Adigan Vipavikriyabihi. What is the use of enjoyments other than the Lord's grace? All material achievements are subject to be annihilated simply by a movement of the eyebrow of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By your principles of devotion to your husband, you have achieved and can enjoy transcendental gifts very rarely obtained by persons proud of aristocracy and material possessions. So all other achievements are destroyed just when the Lord simply furls his eyebrows. Everything material is dispelled. But the opulences that you have achieved by my faith, by pleasing me, these are permanent.
Okay. Then similarly, the other opulence,
the perfection of sarupya. We just discussed sarshti, equal power. Now sarupyam, attaining a transcendental body that looks like the Supreme Lord's body. This happens for, not that everybody gets all of these perfections. Some devotees have bodies that look something different than Lord Narayan's body or Krishna's body. Some devotees get bodies that look very similar to his, like Uddhava. He was born a Brahmin of the Madhya Desh, central India. That means tell them to stop. No, tell them they're interrupting the class.
Be quiet.
I'm Uddhava was born a Brahmin of central India, and in that part of the country the Brahmins are known for their light color complexion. But because of his intimate association with Krishna, he assumed Krishna's complexion and bodily appearance. You know, as because of his meditation, his constant association with Krishna. That's an example of Sarupya Mukti. Not all the devotees of Krishna became like that, only a few. Another case, though, is described in this verse. Gajendra Bhagavat Sparshad Vimukto Jnana Bandhanat Prapto Bhagavato Rupam Pita Vasas Chatur Bhujaha. Because Gajendra, king of the elephants, had been touched directly by the hands of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was immediately freed from all material ignorance and bondage. Thus he received the salvation of Sarupya Mukti, in which he achieved the same bodily features as the Lord, being dressed in yellow garments and possessing four hands. This is Gajendra the elephant, who was given a Vaikuntha body looking like Narayan's. And then the other perfection of Samipya, being able to live in close proximity with the Lord. There's Salokya, to be allowed on his planet, but then you may be living on the same planet with somebody and not see him much. But to be allowed to be always in the presence of somebody, that's Samipya. As has been, Jiva Goswami says, that's already been described, given examples have been given in the Bhagavat Sandarbha, especially in the description of Kardama Muni leaving home to take sannyas. It describes how he first meditated on the general Brahman feature of the Lord. And then by his meditation, of course he's a devotee, his own son is the personality of Godhead, but he practiced generic meditation to finish his life. And he became fully self-realized, free from all bondage. And then, Bhagavad Bhakti Yogena Prapto Bhagavatim Gatim. Then, by the strength of pure devotional service, he achieved his ultimate perfection, Bhagavatim Gatim. And that means he went to the abode of the Lord and was able to enter his intimate association. Prabhupada's translation of that last phrase is, because of discharging uncontaminated devotional service, ultimately he attained the path back to Godhead. Then we're left with Sayujya, the fifth one. And that, yes?
Does it also refer to those who live in the world in Golok Vrindavan?
Yes, especially there, because generally in Vaikuntha you may have a very distant relationship with Krishna. In Goloka, usually the relationships are closer. Most of the Vrajabhasis know Krishna, you know, personally. There are a few who don't. There may be some aborigines living in the outskirts that don't get to see Krishna. But generally, everybody has Krishna as, you know, connect some family connection with Krishna, and they see him very often. So that's samipya. So you know, to attain Goloka usually means you get samipya. Vina mat sevanam. Devotees don't want, as the way Kapiladev describes it, and Prabhupada is simply following that description, vina mat sevanam. Without my service, they don't want the perfections. But if the service brings along, or rather, if to do the service you need the perfection, how will you how are you going to fan Krishna if you're not allowed to stand next to him? If your service is to fan Krishna, then you like your spiritual master says, please come and serve me in Mayapur. So you're going to have to get a visa to go to India. You know, that's required. So if your service is going to be to fan, with a chamara fan, Lord Narayan, you're going to have a visa that says you have samipya, you know, privilege to be close to him. It's required for the service. So it's when they don't want, devotees, pure devotees don't want any of these perfections if it's irrelevant to their service. Without the, apart from their service. Okay? For their own sake, they don't want them. Okay, we're left with the fifth perfection, sayujya, which we justified in a certain way. You know, a certain kind of sayujya is acceptable. Some devotees, shanta bhaktas, have the desire to actually enter the body of the Supreme Lord. That doesn't mean they try to lose their identity. But actually, and we can find some examples of them, of that, like Agasura, mostly demons, who became purified by being killed by the Lord and then entered his body. Agasura is a prime example. And such persons are what we call sadhakas. Although demons don't perform generally favorable sadhana, but it means that they're not perfected being persons. They're persons gradually, graduating up to devotional service, either by being a demon killed by the Lord, or by being a person striving by sadhana, by practice, to attain devotional service. So we see sometimes among sadhanas the sayujya appears, but. Because the Bhagavad, Srimad Bhagavatam doesn't give any clearly delineated examples of devotees achieving. We have demons, but not practicing devotees achieving sayujya mukti. There is such a thing, but examples of it are not given in the Bhagavatam, because the Bhagavatam itself doesn't favor very much this kind of liberation. You know, it's not very tasteful to the mentality of the Bhagavatam, therefore examples are not given. Examples of the other perfections, Salokya, Samipya, Sarshti, they are given. Dhruva Maharaj getting the Sarupya and so on. Okay. So, yes?
These things that they attain, like Dhruva Maharaj attained that, can they still
get more perfection, like desire to go to Goloka Vrindavan? Yes. They can? Yes. From Vaikuntha, they desire sometimes to go to Goloka Vrindavan?
Yes.
Yes. To many cases, devotees who are not satisfied just to be in Vaikuntha and they have to move on. Or they're not satisfied with a particular rasa and have to move up to the next rasa. Which means that their sarupa, their potential, was something higher, and they just gradually worked through stages to realize their full potential. You know, they attained some intermediate stage first, and were not fully satisfied with that, and then simply progressed to the higher stage. It's not that someone changes his sarupa, that's not possible. But someone can realize his sarupa by gradual stages, which means to progress up. Because a devotee in a higher rasa, also that rasa also includes all the elements of the lower rasas. If you're a potentialist, your actual sarupa is in vatsalya rasa. You can still practice in dasya rasa, because you're going to have to learn all the ins and outs of dasya rasa that's included in vatsalya rasa. So you can become first, just a dasya bhakta, experience that, live that for a while, and then move up to the next phase, even through several stages.
But if it's your swarup to be in Vaikuntha, then you cannot go higher.
As far as I understand, maybe you can dig up some statement from somebody, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or somebody to contradict me, but my naive understanding is yes, your swarup is what it is; it doesn't change. Mm-hmm. We may not discover what our until we've been through ages, but it's whatever fixed. So, the sarupa Sarvajya Mukti is not clearly described in the Bhagavatam, but still Srila Jiva Goswami is trying to give some description of it. Usually, what a devotee experiences in that perfection of Sayujya is simply the effulgent experience of being merged in the ecstasy that belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yeah, to sort of participate in his ecstasy, and that's it. Just like a person sees a very bright light, he's dazzled by it. He can't see what's behind the light. If he becomes he's approaching the sun, there's so much brilliant effulgence, you can't see what's actually in the sun. Like that, a devotee is dazzled by the Lord's ecstasy, and he can't go beyond that. But sometimes, by the Lord's special desire, by his special favor, one of these Shanta Bhaktas have attained the Sayujya Mukti, merging into the body of God, still sometimes the Lord grants them, by his favor, a little taste of enjoying maybe a little like remnant. That's how you get a little remnant of the Lord's prasadam. So you get a little remnant of his pastime pleasure. Even though you're sitting in his body, you get a little bit of taste of what's going on outside. Little fragment. But it can't be a complete taste. While those who are fixed in this sayujya, they don't have the capacity to reciprocate with the Lord in any active way. They just sometimes get a few tidbits of a taste of what it's like, vicariously. It's like you watch a movie or read a book, you get a vicarious experience of what people are doing, even when you're not doing it yourself. Then, sometimes by the Lord's special desire, or for a special purpose of the Lord's pastimes, those devotees who were situated in the Sayujya merging are again sent out. They're kicked out of the Lord's body. And they become associates of the Lord. They graduate to a higher stage. Examples are Shupala and Dr. Vakra, these demons. They were merged into the body of the Lord, but then they took birth again and became his associates. That's actually during the passage of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I don't want to make a guess. I knew at one point, but I can't remember. We're talking about Lord Chaitanya's pastimes.
Yeah, but he became
Jagai and Madhai. Are Jagai and Madhai?
Yes.
Okay, the answer is. Okay, the answer is that they are Jagai and Madhai.
Yeah.
Okay?
although it's a fourth birth, but I mean.
It's an extra birth. They've already liberated.
Yeah.
But now they're graduating to become associates of the Lord by the grace of Lord Nityananda. although they had attained Sayujya, Chankasi is Kamsa, I think. Although they had attained merging in Sayujya, they then again became associates of the Lord. This is described in the seventh canto, first chapter. Vairanu bandati vrina dhyani nachyuta satmatam nitao punarharir parshvam jagmatur vishnu parshadau. These two associates of Lord Vishnu, Jayan Vijay, maintained a feeling of enmity for a very long time. Because of always thinking of Krishna in that way, it says, they regained the shelter of the Lord, having returned home, back to Godhead. Okay. Bhagavatam doesn't specify when and how that happened. That we find in Chaitanya Bhagavat and other books. Okay. Now these five, there are five kinds of mukti, or five kinds of perfection and liberation. They're all better than Brahma-kaivalya, the perfection of apparently merging into the impersonal existence of God. Because they, you know, what you experience in any of these five, including the Vaishnav, Sayujya, is an uninterrupted, a perpetual connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And particularly one actually perceives him, one gets, you know, a personal vision of him. That makes them by all means greater than the conception of Brahma Kaivalya, merging into the impersonal. And there are many statements from Shastras and ancient authorities to corroborate this. Sometimes a person gradually achieves the highest stage of Bhagavat Prapti, you know, realizes God, after first of all realizing Brahman. He goes through these two phases. Just like the yogis who achieve liberation by their meditation, sometimes they leave their body and immediately go to Vaikuntha, you know, with no delay. And sometimes they gradually travel out of the universe, visiting all the planets. Similarly, sometimes a successful practitioner becomes a pure devotee by stages. First, he achieves a personal liberation, and then personal liberation. Example, this is Achamil. And the process of how he achieved his perfection is described in the sixth canto. There's six verses here. One, two, three, four, five, six. I'll read all six. This is number 39. But actually, Srila Prabhupada takes a different slant on it. He's describing in the first three verses how Achamil was practicing Krishna consciousness. Yeah, a different way of looking at it. Not that this way is wrong or that way is wrong. They're two different interpretations of the same passage. But Jiva Goswami here is giving this as an example of it. Achamil is supposed to be first of all meditating on Brahman and then moving up to a higher stage. So I'm going to have to change the translations for the first three verses, excuse me, just to fit this other interpretation. Both of them are correct. Satasmin deva sarana asino yogamastitaha patyarita indriya gramam yuyoja mana atmani. So, in Hardwar, Achamil took shelter at a Vishnu temple, where he practiced yoga. The verse just says yoga. Prabhupada translates it as the process of bhakti yoga. Okay. So let's just say to follow the slant that Jiva Goswami is putting on it. He practiced yoga. Pratyarita indriya gramo, and he withdrew his senses. All of his senses. And yuyoja mana atmani. He fixed his mind on the self. Okay? That's all it says literally. Prabhupada says he controlled the senses and fully applied his mind in the service of the Lord. Yes, he did. But you know, Jiva Goswami is saying he did it gradually. Okay, then the next verse says, Tato gunebhyo atmanam viyujyatma samadina yuyuje bhagavad dhamni Brahman Anubhavatmani. Then, disconnecting, I'm making a new translation here. Then, disconnecting his mind from the material modes by fixing his attention on the self, he was able to connect himself with Brahman, the Supreme, generic Supreme, which is the effulgence. Dhamma means effulgence also, of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the self-conscious, self-aware self, the self-aware, the, anyway, conscious self, the Supreme Self. So this is, you know, if we read it literally, it's a description of Ajahnul practicing impersonal meditation, becoming Brahman realized. Third verse. Yar upadata dis tasmin adrakshit purushan puraha upalabhyopalabdhan prag vavande shirisa dvijaha. That's the fourth verse. When his intelligence and mind were fixed upon the probably says on the form of the Lord, but converted into the impersonal, was fixed on Brahman. The Brahman, Ajamil, once again saw before him the four celestial persons. He could understand that they were those he had seen previously, and thus he offered them his obeisances by bowing down before them. Hitva kalevaram tirte gangayam darshanadanu sadyat sarupam jagvihe Bhagavat Parsha Vartinam. Upon seeing the Vishnu Dutas, Ajamil gave up his material body at Haridwar on the banks of the Ganges. He regained the original spiritual body, his original spiritual body, which was a body appropriate for an associate of the Lord. Sakam vihayasa vipro mahapurusha kinkarai haimam vimanam ahuhya Yaya yatra shriyak patihi. Accompanied by the order carriers of Lord Vishnu, Ajamil aborted an airplane made of gold. Passing through the airways, he went directly to the abode of Lord Vishnu, the husband of the goddess of fortune. So, obvious description of how he was. I'm sorry, if you take it, the one interpretation, it's a description of Ajamil practicing Brahman meditation, and then being awarded entrance into Vaikuntha. So he, according to that way of looking at it, he graduated from first Brahman realization to Bhagavan realization. But we should understand from all this that if you can achieve, why go through all this trouble of gradually going through the process? If you can immediately achieve Bhagavan realization, that's better. Any questions here?
Isn't it that many of us, like it says in Bhagavad Gita, we went through all these processes, but in lifetimes, Brahman realization
always. Yeah, it's said like that, that we should, we can realize that if someone's practicing devotional service, that he's already done everything leading up to devotional service.
So we actually went through the process.
Or something equivalent. I mean, you can't skip over things by just going to, you know, going directly to devotional service.
You can.
Yes. So it doesn't mean that we actually did. I had to go through everything, every single
but
possible.
Not necessarily. We went through it. It's possible we directly go through it.
Yes. But anyway, if you know, which two things? I'm sorry. Yeah. Okay.
No, just like.
Yes. So some people are especially intelligent and fortunate, and they skip over all the intermediate steps. But generally, yeah, usually we have to go, you know, learn through the school of hard knocks and go through all the alternative processes and gradually move our way up. And generally, you can assume that someone who's practicing devotional service has performed the preliminary processes in the previous life, or equivalent of it. You know, if you manage to skip over some steps, you still get the results. You know, if you get a diploma by passing a test rather than taking the courses, without taking the courses, still you get the same effect. Yes. Because of meditation. You assume a body by intense meditation on something or somebody you that changes, you know, the next body you take is colored by your meditation. Just like the example given in the 11th canto, the small fly who's captured in a hole by the big patience-crit bee, and he's, you know, killed by that bee, but because he's thinking of that bee at the time of death, he becomes one of them, that bee in his next life. Yes, yeah, so we don't, not that everybody in Goloka looks like Krishna, but Krishna has two hands, unlike everybody in Vaikuntha, including Narayan, and therefore all the devotees in Vraja also have two hands.
But they have different colors.
Yeah, so therefore the sarupya is not given out to everybody. If it was, life would be more boring. So for variety's sake, devotees, you know, sometimes aren't given it. No, if you, according to Sanatana Goswami's description, devotees assume all sorts of forms in Vaikuntha for Lord Narayan's pleasure. Or they're changing forms constantly, even becoming birds or demons or anything.
Monkeys,
yeah. Monkeys, yeah. Yes. In Vaikuntha. Yeah. Yes. Read the fourth chapter of the book that just came out today. Yes. Fourth chapter of second part of Bhagavad Gita described. Yes.
Yes. I'm just trying to understand what you said about in Vaikuntha, the devotees also have this opulence and they have a kingdom.
Not literally kingdom. It's just that they have so much. They have opulence, you know, wealth, big households, vehicles, servants. Powers, so just like a man's house is his kingdom. So, you know, it's just their own personal entourage, but it's more opulent than a kingdom in this world. Anybody in Vaikuntha. Yes.
But they have their own family life and everything.
Yes, we can pick up hints of that in various descriptions. Again, look at the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Bhagavatam, the second part.
I didn't actually understand what was happening because we are reading Prabhupada's translation. This is Prabhupada's translation.
Yeah, except I changed the first three verses. Prabhupada usually doesn't do this thing just on his own. He's probably reading Vishwanath Chakravarti's commentary on it or something, some other explanation of what's going on in these verses. And there, it's just describing Ajamil practicing devotional service in the very beginning. When he got to Hardwar, he sat down and practiced devotional meditation. But Jiva Goswami pictures him practicing Brahman meditation first. Okay, so two different ways of looking at it, based on the same description, the same words, and just interpreting them differently. Okay? And you get that sometimes. You know, and the commentators are not fighting with each other, they're just reading different possibilities into the same words. Okay? And unfortunately, I mean, it's not a thing to be done usually to change Prabhupada's translation, but just to fit Jiva Goswami's explanation, I had to make the verse fit the explanation. Yes. Let me look at it. Deva Sadhana. Well, the thing is, Deva can mean also demigod. It could have been. temple of Sumdeva, but anyway, that whatever. I don't know if anybody thinks that, any commentator said that it's just a demigod temple. Okay, let's move on. Another 4 pages here. Okay. All right, now the important point's going to be made that, anyway, we've described all these different kinds of mukti. Jiva Goswami has gone to elaborate detail to make it clear that we understand what mukti involves. Now, the most important point is that priti, bhagavat priti, pure love for God, prema bhakti, is by all means superior to all conceptions of mukti. That's our main thesis. That this is a fifth goal of life, higher than even mukti. Okay. Even though it's, of course, true that unless somebody has some love for God, he can't even achieve these perfections of the liberation. You have to have, how are you going to go to Vaikuntha if you have no love of God? Still, we have to consider that sometimes persons, impure devotees, are striving for these perfections for their own sake because they want to eradicate their misery. They're not aiming at pure love of God. And their prime intention is not actually to just please the Lord. They want to save themselves and get rid of their misery and therefore get some perfection and liberation. So therefore we have to distinguish. Therefore we have to categorize the perfections as, these perfections as inferior. Because if you just want the perfection, actually you can't separate the two. You can't actually achieve the perfection without attaining love of God. But there are people who are trying to get the perfections without love of God. And therefore we have to make it understood that these perfections by themselves are inferior to love of God. That liberation is not the final goal. If we want liberation without love of God, then we're aiming in the wrong direction. Okay, so, refer back to this statement in the 12th canto we were talking about before, kaivalyaikya prayojanam, glorification of the Bhavatam at the end of the Bhavatam. That this Bhavatam is very great because the only aim of the Bhavatam is kaivalya. But we're left with the problem of figuring out what that word kaivalya means. The impersonalists take it to mean merging, becoming one with God. Is that the, after all, is that what the final message of the Bhavatam is? Some people say that after reading the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. But that's the impersonalist's idea. But no, Srila Jiva Goswami is here insisting that that very word kaivalya being used there has to mean priti, prema bhakti. The word actually finds its final rest when we understand that it means pure love. Similarly, the statement Sarva Vedanta Sarami, Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta. Okay, does that also mean the Bhagavatam is, underneath all the personalist trappings, it's really Advaita document? Some people say that Bhagavatam is actually presenting Advaita, but same philosophy, Mayavad philosophy. No, that's all been explained previously in the Tattva Sandarbha, Bhagavat Sandarbha. The essence of all the Vedanta is pure love of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That Kaivalyaikya Prayojanam verse. The same verse in the third line says, Hari Lila Katavrata. And fourth line, Mrityananda Dasatsuram. Because the Bhagavatam is filled with so many descriptions of the pastimes of Lord Hari and his different incarnations. Therefore, it bestows immortal ecstasy on all pure devotees, satsuram, on all the saintly persons and devotees. That's the actual mood of the book, what the Bhagavatam is about, not teaching you how to merge into Brahman, but how to merge into the ecstasy of enchanting about Krishna and remembering him. So the real focus of the Bhagavatam is pure love of God. That's the perfection that it is trying to push us toward. We have the description in the 10th canto, 12th chapter, the cowherd boys. Ittam satam brahma sukhana bhutya. These saintly persons, these cowherd boys, they had realized Brahman. But how are they, what was the result of their realizing Brahman? They're playing with Krishna as young boys. Sakam vijahru, krita punya punja. They've executed all pious activities in their past lives. And now they're playing together with the Supreme Absolute Truth in his original form. That's their kaivalya, merging into the existence of the Supreme. Also described, Shukadev talking about himself. Parinishtitopi nayurgunye uttama shloka lilaya grihita cheta raja shir. Akyanam yadaditavan. Even though I was before fixed in impersonal realization, after hearing the Bhagavatam, I was so attracted by these descriptions that I dedicated my life to studying and preaching this book. Okay, so this is the way we should properly understand the word kaivalya. It means prema bhakti. Still, if someone wants to, be literal about it, some grammarian says, no, kaivalya means purity. The dictionary says that. We have to follow the dictionary. Okay, we can do that. But what's real purity? What's the highest purity? That's only found in pure love of God. Now, even if you want to make it mean purity, real purity is to rise yourself to the level of love of God. That's also been established in the previous sandarbhas. And it's also affirmed by showing how all other ideas of purity and of religiosity are inferior or faulty. Very beginning of the Bhagavatam, Dharma Projita Kaitavo Tra. This book rejects all kinds of cheating religion. But the commentary clarifies that. Pra Ujita. Ujita means thrown out. And then it's emphasized by the prefix pra, completely thrown out. No exceptions. Everything that's at all a cheating process is rejected by the Bhagavatam. No compromise, not even a little. So, but Sridhar Swami points out, prashabdin, moksh abhisandhir, that emphasis of that extra prefix pra, that means that even the endeavor to achieve liberation is rejected in Bhagavatam. And that's Sridhar Swami, who some call a Mayavadi. So, in the matter of the practice of pure devotional service, endeavor for liberation is a cheating process because it aims at something else other than love for the Lord and fulfilling His pleasure. Okay, then some others say, the word Kaivalya means the Lord Himself. He's called Kaivalya, the one without a second. Or else His personality is called Kaivalya, His unique personality, one without a second. Okay, but still, in effect, that means, who can realize that Kaivalya? The Lord and His transcendental nature. Only those who have pure love for Him. Still means the same thing. As the four Kumaras prayed, after cursing the giant Vijaya, then they were afraid that they had committed an offense by cursing them, and they thought, maybe now Narayan is going to punish us and send us to hell. And so then when they met Narayan, when Narayan came to see them, they first of all they were afraid that maybe they're going to be punished. They confessed and told him, "Kamam bhavasva vijinayar nireyeshu nastat cheto livad yadi nute panayo rameta." O Lord, we pray that you let us be born in any hellish condition of life, just as long as our hearts and minds are always engaged in the service of your lotus feet. Aliva, just like bees, you know, are helplessly attached to a flower garland. Similarly, may we be attached to your feet, no matter what hell we're sent to. So that's that kind of attitude is required in one who's going to actually realize the Lord as the one without a second.
That's a very high level of God consciousness, to just say this in any hellish position, but just...
Yes. They were impersonalist up to that point. When Narayan came to them at that moment, and then they smelled the tulsi at his feet, then their hearts were actually transformed. And they said this just before they got that experience. They were just neophytes on the beginning, in the stage of beginning. They're given examples of Agyanis, of neophyte devotees. Krishna says four kinds of people approach me: Arta, Gyasa, Artarti, Gyanicha. So the four Kumaras were like Gyanis; they were perfect Gyanis, and they were just beginning at the very. They were just at the verge of devotional service, and they're talking like this. They haven't even become devotees yet. They're just on, you know, 5 minutes later they'll be devotees. Okay.
That's by Krishna's mercy
then,
that they come
to
such a high
level. Yeah. Yes. Well, they're speaking theoretically. They're speaking like Gyanis, as Gyanis. But Krishna's pleased by it, and he's going to very quickly bestow on them the mercy by which they actually become pure devotees. Tesham Gyani Nityamaya. The best of all aspiring candidates for devotional service is the Gyani. He can very quickly become a devotee if he's not envious. Brahmavadis are non-envious. The what we call the Advaitavadis, Mayavadis, they're envious. Yes? No, but we have impersonalist Gyanis who only know him in his you know, don't know his personality. Like, that's Brahma Gyan.
You know that
Yes. By Purnachandra, yeah.
Purnachandra.
Yes. Yeah, but it's not a universal definition. Maybe in a certain context. You know, a verse uses the word Gyani, and in that verse it's meant to mean a devotee. But not all Gyanis are devotees. They're two different things.
No, but it seems that in the Gita, according to the Gita Vrita, it seems that the Lord means by Gyani in that category, in this context, that it's someone who actually is a devotee.
Yeah, but that's for a certain verse. That's, you know, in a certain statement it means that. But it can't mean, you know, we can't say that Gyani and Bhakta mean the same all the time.
No.
Gyani is, you know, most Gyanis are impersonalist.
Yeah.
Okay, so it doesn't always mean that he knows Krishna.
Yeah.
Okay. Krishna can sometimes use the word to mean a devotee.
Mm-hmm.
So he tells Krishna, you know, therefore Arjuna, be a yogi.
Right.
But he doesn't mean be a, you know, an ordinary yogi, he means be a bhakti yogi. But he, in that verse he just says be a yogi. But we understand from the whole argument up to that verse that he doesn't mean ordinary yogi. And here he doesn't, in that verse he doesn't mean ordinary Gyani. Okay? All right. Okay. So anyway, you know, we can argue like this, that Kaivalya is supposed to mean purity, or it's supposed to mean the unique Lord or the Lord's unique personality. But anyway, the fact of the matter it is that by all this logic, the word Kaivalya and similar words actually refer to pure devotional service. That's the primary meaning of such terms as Kaivalya. Okay. Kaivalya Samatapatas Pratabhakti Yoga in second canto, third chapter. This is Sukadeva Goswami speaking, and Sridhar Goswami explains what he says. Well, the phrase actually means here, the process of devotional service that concords with the conception of, that's in agreement with the conception of Kaivalya. Now, does that mean the devotional service is something secondary to impersonal realization? That, you know, devotees are, sentimental people are encouraged to worship a personal form of God because they don't know any better, and then later they can become advanced impersonalists. No, that would, you know, according to Sridhar Swami, that's not what the, what's being talked about there. What is generally promoted and encouraged under the name Kaivalya, what that really is bhakti yoga, not the other way around. Kaivalya Samapata. Pata means path. Path to what? Path leading to the realization of the personality of Godhead. Okay. Similarly, in the Bhagavatam second canto, there's a listing and description of the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam. Atra sargo visargascha, stanam poshanam utayaha, manvantare shanukata, nirodho muktir ashrayaha. Creation, the primary creation by Vishnu, the secondary creation by Lord Brahma. Sargo visargascha, stanam. How the Lord maintains everybody, gives His mercy in general to everybody, maintains their lives, provides all the necessities of life, and then Poshanam, how He gives special protection to His devotees. Poshanam, and so on, the 10 topics of the Bhagavatam. Among the 10 topics is mukti. What's termed, the word mukti, liberation, is given, and then is described. Mukti hitvanyuta rupam svarupena svyavastiti. Mukti means to put aside all false conceptions of who you are, contrary ideas, and realize who you really are. Now that can fit also the impersonalist conception. You know, you think you're a person with qualities, and you should realize you're not a person and you have no qualities.
But that's illusion, that's not human.
Yes? Yeah, it's a wrong conception. I'm just saying that the definition of the Bhagavatam could be read as referring to that also. Bhagavatam just says forgetting who you aren't and realizing who you really are. But that leaves it open. It's vague about, you know, what, who you really are. That we have to read the rest of the Bhagavatam to find out. Okay, but even there, the word mukti, when we actually settle its proper meaning, it should be understood as referring, again, only to Prema Bhakti in that context. And the other top, among the other topics is Poshanam, the Lord's special protection to His favorite devotees. And that means granting special favor. So what's the best special favor the Supreme Lord can give somebody? Well, that's bestowing pure love for Himself. So again, the same idea is there, that the focus of the Bhagavatam is all around the idea of pure love of God. Even these 10 apparently ordinary topics. For example, when Prithu Maharaj was visited by Lord Narayan, who offered him a benediction, he said, Lord Narayan was pleased with him. He was performing sacrifices so nicely that Vishnu came and blessed him. Varam cha mat kanchana manavendra vinishra. O Lord of men, King, please choose some benediction for me, something. And Prithu Maharaj was hedging. He didn't really want to take a benediction. He told him, he yata charet bala hitam pita swayam tata tvam eva harsi naksamidam. Just like, so you should pick something, you decide what to do. You can just, you know, you can benedict me however you want. And, but the Lord insisted, no, you have to choose some benediction. So he said, okay, tamaha rajan mahi bhakti rastu te, please, just let me have pure love for you. And bhakti here means not just, you know, let me, you know, practice worshipping you, but let me have preeti, pure love. Intelligent devotee is insisting in his conversation with the Lord, you want to give me something, and give me the best thing only. You know, you want to really favor me, then you have to give me pure love. Similarly, if we understand what the Bhagavatam is offering as its ultimate, the ultimate benefit to be achieved by hearing the Bhagavatam. Generally, in the Vedic system, if you write a book, you have to justify the purpose of your book. You know, you have to tell the reader what will he will gain by studying your book. So the Bhagavatam does that too. And we see, when we study it in context and put all the pieces together, what benefit the Bhagavatam is offering to its readers is attainment of pure love. Love for Krishna. And thus, the Bhagavatam is determining, ascertaining, that that is the ultimate goal of life. This is also confirmed by what Vyasadeva experienced in his meditation when he was told by his guru to sit down and figure it out how to write the Bhagavatam. And what Shukadeva was feeling in his heart according to what he says about himself. Vyasadeva sat and meditated. He saw the Lord. He saw Maya standing behind the Lord. He saw how Maya confuses everybody and they forget who they are and get entangled in illusion. And then he saw that that the kind of information that would have to be provided to the living entities to relieve them of their misunderstanding, and he put all that information into the Srimad Bhagavatam. That's a description of Vyasa's meditation. And the next verse says, Yasyam vai shriyamanayam krishne parama puruṣe bhaktir utpadyate pumsak shoka moha bayapaha. By simply hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, one develops devotion for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that will dispel any person's sorrow, confusion, and fear. That's Vyasadeva's realization of what the purpose of the Bhagavatam is. Also in the beginning, in that verse, Dharma Projita Kaita Vodra. In this book, all cheating religion is kicked out. But that verse goes on to say, Kim va parayar, what's the use of any other book? Ishvara sadhya vidya vidyate tukriti bisu sushubistakshanat. Because as soon as one gives attentive hearing to this book, really focuses his attention on it, then immediately the Supreme Lord is captured within the heart. From that moment on. So that's also defining what's the benefit to be achieved by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. And since Srimad Bhagavatam aims at only the supreme perfection of life, that benefit must be the supreme perfection of life. Also in the Chatukshloki Bhagavatam, four verses the Brahma heard from Narayan, from Lord Garbhadaksha Vishnu. Sadahasyam tarangam ja. Hear from me, the supreme truth, gyanam vijnanam cha, transcendental knowledge along with practical realization. Sarahasyam, along with its secret aspect and all of its subsidiary details. What is that secret? What is the inner mystery of transcendental knowledge and realization? So that rahasya, that's prema bhakti. That's the real essence, the secret essence of the process of God realization. So it is, we're establishing now that, by all these arguments, that divine affectionate love for the personality of Godhead is actual nirvana. Well, the word is apavarga here, but that means cessation of material existence, nirvana. What does it consist of? Getting the special favor in the best way from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's the fruit of hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. And among all possible perfections of life, it's definitely the best. So, when Narada was instructing Vyasadeva, chastising him, and trying to encourage him to sit down and write this compilation, Srimad Bhagavatam, Narada told him, Yata dharm artayas charta munivar yanutkirtata natata vasudevasya mahima yanuvarnitaha. Although, great sage, you have very broadly described the four principles, beginning with religious performances, you have not described the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hey, what can I say? Point is that it's not good enough just to realize the Supreme. You have to develop pure love, and then your life is perfect. Okay, that's it. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Was actually protected by the love, that love of God, because I really never realized this, that he was protected by the love from Krishna.
Yes.
He was thinking just this, he didn't protect him.
This is the potency of bhakti. Bhakti is stronger than anything else. You know, no other power has the ability to force Krishna into submission. What to speak of defeating all evil forces. It eclipses the attraction of liberation, and so on. It bestows immense happiness. It says only bhakti has this power. Okay. Anything else? Okay, thank you. So we have one more session tomorrow night, and that will mostly be description of how preeti, pure love for Krishna, ridicules all other conceptions of liberation. And it will mostly be a series of quotations describing the many different ways that preeti ridicules all kinds of liberation. And many quotations will be there from the Bhagavatam. Okay, I'm sorry, you had a question? No?
I thought you said that we're having a session tomorrow. You didn't say so.
I'm sorry, didn't say?
No.
That we're having what tomorrow?
She misunderstood.
No, that there's one more class tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so nice.
Okay, thank you. Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai. Yeah.